This is The Guardian.
Hi, everybody. Max here. You probably saw the recent story about Adelaide United's Josh Cavallo, who became the first openly gay male active player in a top-tier league. Homosexuality in football is something we'll do a special episode of Football Weekly on soon. We also wanted to share an episode from our sister slash mother slash much more sensible podcast Today in Focus. In this episode, Michael Safi interviews Josh about the response to his recent coming out, his life before that, and the difficulty he would have playing in Qatar. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to Today in Focus. Wherever you're listening to this, here's the pod.
Ryan. Fashionable. Oh, what a goal! Oh, that's a magnificent goal!
Back in 1980, Justin Fashionable's over-the-shoulder volley, an absolute screamer from the outside of the box, was the goal of the season.
Points and cover as the crowd applaud, surely one of the best goals I've seen at Carrow Road this season. Really sweet turn by the tall man.
Fashionable was the first black footballer to command a £1 million transfer fee. But he was a first for another reason. In 1990, playing for lower-ranked clubs in the tail end of his career, he stunned the footballing world by coming out. In the words of the front page of the Sun newspaper, which broke the story, he confessed to being gay. The reaction was appalling, including from his own brother, John, who said at the time he wasn't even sure he could play or share a change room with Justin anymore. And he reckoned other footballers felt the same.
He's come out publicly and said his sexual preferences. You know, I mean, what? Every footballer doesn't come out and say they like women, they like men. That's not nobody else's business. So now he'll have to suffer the consequences. But I wouldn't like to play or even get changed in the vicinity of it. That's just the way I feel. So if I'm like that, I'm sure the rest of the footballers are like that.
John later said he deeply regretted those comments, that they were selfish and wrong. But he wasn't alone. Looking back, the way everyone reacted seems crazy. The game and the world have come a long way.
I can't change my height.
I can't change that I look like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
I can't change that I'm gorgeous.
But together we can change the game. Players are lacing up to kick homophobia out of football. Use hashtag rainbow.
Premier League clubs play matches in rainbow laces to make their stance on homophobia clear. During Pride Month this year, in June, FIFA flew the rainbow flag outside its headquarters and banned Mexican fans from attending two international matches after years of anti-gay slurs and chants from the crowds. But for all that embrace of diversity, football's missing a key thing. Gay players. Not the women's game. They're completely cool about this. There were more than 40 lesbian or bisexual players in the last Women's World Cup. But the men? There were none. Zero. Playing the game at the professional level. Until a couple of weeks ago.
Hi everyone, it's Josh Cavallo here. I'm at my home here in Adelaide. There's something personal that I need to share with everyone. I'm a footballer and I'm gay.
That's Josh Cavallo, a 21-year-old left-back and midfielder with Adelaide United. And now, the only openly gay top-tier footballer in the world. So, if men's football has come such a long way since the dark days when Justin Fashionable came out, where are the others? From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, the story of Josh Cavallo and why there aren't more like him. Josh, can you start by telling me, what's your first memory of football?
My first memory of football would be playing in the backyard with my brother and my cousin. I think I was probably like 10 or 11 years old at the time. I was more of a tennis player growing up, but my brother encouraged me to kick a ball around and then it went from there. My love grew for the game. Haven't looked back since. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, you didn't look back, and it wasn't long before you were being recognised as a future prospect. At 13, you were scouted by a national training program. You went on to get a scholarship at Melbourne City, a professional club, so you were on your way. Josh, presumably as you're growing up, you're getting better and you're being recognised by more people. And you're also coming to understand yourself, including your sexuality. Do you remember when you first realised that you might be gay?
Yeah, I was about 16 years old.
Back at 16, was it something that you imagined that you could tell other people about, like friends or even teammates?
No. At the age of 16, I was very scared to talk about that sort of stuff. You know, I was, feeling those emotions, but I didn't know if that was something that, you know, would come and pass by and then I would be straight, or I was very confused with my sexuality. So, it was definitely something that I did not want to talk about, and it's taken me a long time to talk about it comfortably now.
So on the pitch, you're doing really well, progressing through the youth system, getting closer to this dream of becoming a professional footballer one day. But off the pitch, you're going through this other struggle entirely by yourself. Did you ever fear that one of those might get in the way of the other, that the being gay might somehow stop you from becoming a professional?
Yeah. Not having anyone to look up to and to see, okay, they're playing football and they're gay and they're having a successful career, that is something that scared me and something that I was worried that, you know, if I was to potentially come out one day, would it affect my career in a bad way?
Did you ever think about giving the game up, that like somehow who you really were and your dreams just didn't align?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I thought of alternatives, you know, if football didn't work out, because I didn't want to continue playing football and being a closeted gay man and not happy. You know, on the pitch it was great, but when I got off the pitch, it was hell. I did not like my life at all. You know, I was going to bed and I was unhappy. Some nights I was crying myself to sleep.
But you didn't give up. You kept going and you made it. You were signed up on a professional contract by Western United in 2019. Earning your new team a penalty on your debut.
Staying down, a late decision by Bazanas, who's given away a penalty. Adam Kersey gives it.
That day that you signed the contract, alongside the joy you were feeling, was there any part of you that was anxious or worried or felt like you can't enjoy this in the kind of pure way that another footballer who wasn't gay may be able to?
Yeah, look, I think it made me think, you know, maybe I have to hide who I am for a very long time. And look, I really loved football and I wanted to play football. I was very keen to sign my contract and to get starting and to play for the world to see me. So I think I was ready to sacrifice myself for a little bit and hide myself until I was ready. It wasn't a time where I was prepared to come out, and I wasn't ready at such a young age.
So did you kind of make a deal with yourself? Like, look, I'm going to play football, I'm going to chase my dream, but in exchange, this part of me, I need to keep it quiet for maybe a few years.
Yeah, look, I don't know if it was maybe for a few years, but it was definitely I needed to keep it quiet. I was more looking at, you know, once I retire and finish playing football, I could be myself. But look, the happiness that it took away from me, and it did lead me to have severe depression, and it did bring a lot of mental issues into my life, and it was something that, you know, I couldn't continue to deal with, and I couldn't hide, and I didn't want to be someone else. I wanted to be myself, and it was greater than football for me. It was my personal life. So at the end of the day, you know, you want to go to bed and you want to be happy and you want to wake up and you want to be excited to go through the day, not make it a miserable and something that you don't want to participate in. And I had to put on this mask, and this mask of people thinking of I was happy and I was bubbly and I was happy to be a footballer.
Yeah, I'm super excited for the future, and I'm excited that it remains in the red shirt. For the remainder of this season, I'm looking at trying to get my first trophy under my belt, and most importantly, to bring another trophy back to the club for the fans.
But at the end of the day, you know, I wasn't happy outside of football. I was very depressed.
When you were young, I guess it may have seemed like that was something you could do, just like wear that mask and then get on with it, you know, be a happy, bubbly footballer, train with everyone and play. But like for those of us who haven't had to try to live that double life, like what's it actually like to go through a day, go through a career hiding such an important part of yourself?
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I didn't just hide it from my teammates. I hid it from my family. I hid it from my friends. I hid it from everyone I hang around. So it was only when I was by myself that I could genuinely like relax and not worry and not stress. But it's the constant reminder of conversations you had throughout the day, you know. Is people going to get suspicious of something you've said, or did you not say the right thing, or just living in that constant fear and doubt that you could be questioned, or your lies just don't add up. You know, that's something that you play over and over in your head. And that was definitely like on my mind when I was on the pitch. You know, I was thinking about things about what's going to happen in the change room when people ask me questions after the game. It could be just an unconscious question like, oh, what girl are you seeing, or who are you dating? And people don't mean to offend you, but it's, they don't just know your situation. They don't know what you're going through.
When you were growing up, did you feel like you had to kind of hide yourself in that atmosphere? Were there ever moments in those change rooms where you felt like, you know, your true self would never be accepted in this kind of environment?
Yeah, look, it became a habit of what I used to do. You know, I used to finish training and I used to grab my bag and leave straight away. I wouldn't try and make conversation. I wouldn't try and talk. I would be in and out very quickly. And that's something that my teammates would look at and say, oh, maybe he doesn't want to socialize. Maybe he doesn't like us. Maybe he doesn't want to hang around us. That wasn't the case. It was the case of I was feeling, you know, uncomfortable, and I was scared, you know, I was going to get questioned or ask questions that I didn't make sense when I was telling him and stuff like that. So I just didn't like to be in those situations, so I would often remove myself from it.
You talked about this feeling of having to wear a mask, never being able to be open about who you are. And I'm wondering, what happened to that feeling as you started having some success in your career? Like, did that tension inside you begin to get worse?
Yeah, look, it became like, as more well-known as I got, it started building up and getting worse and worse and worse. You know, it got to the point where I was in the public and I had to act like someone I wasn't, you know, when a fan came up to me. And that kills me, because I want to be myself. I want to show my fans. I want to show my teammates. I want to show my friends around me that who I am, and not have this mask on. And like, it's just like anything in life. You know, you want to share your hobbies with your friends. You want to share what you like. You like talking, making conversations. And it was something that I had to lie all the time about. And it wasn't fun to do that. So I feel like having the mask and as I got more successful and more successful, it did worsen as the days went on.
Earlier this year, Josh, you won your club's Rising Star Award for the 2020-21 season. And you've talked about this conflict inside yourself, but was that moment, winning that prize, at least a point at which you could feel joy? Or was it also, I guess, tainted by this secret you were carrying?
Yeah, on the outside, look, I looked happy. But on the inside, something was eating me away. It was really weird feeling. It was a sensation that, you know, I have never felt before. You know, I wanted to be happy, but I couldn't. There was something holding me back. And, you know, I wanted to celebrate with my friends and family. And it's such a great achievement to get in such a small space of time that I was at the club. You've got people congratulating you and patting you on the back, and you would love to celebrate and have a laugh with them. I couldn't, because I was too worried about what I was going to say and if I was going to get caught up in a lie. And it was such a great achievement to get. It just didn't make sense. And it really hurt me that I couldn't be myself that night.
So was that it? Was that the moment where you decided, I've had enough of this, you know, something has to change?
Yes, that was the tipping point for me. And that made me think, you know, I just want to be happy in life. I just want to be myself. And I'm sure people will accept me for who I am, because at the end of the day, you know, I don't want to lie to them and I don't want to be fake.
Okay, so you have this realization. What's the process from there? Like, how did you come around to the idea of being open with people? Can you take me to the moment where you told the other guys in your club?
Yeah, it was quite a nerve-wracking experience. I wasn't going to lie. My heart was like beating out of my chest. I swear my T-shirt was moving. we had a meeting in front of all the coaches and the players, and everyone sat down and I spoke to the boys and I said, guys, there's something I need to tell you. You know, there's something very personal to me that I need to share to everyone. It's something I've been battling for a long time now, and I feel comfortable enough in this environment. You know, you guys are my family here. You guys are more than just teammates and co-workers to me. You guys are my brothers. And I said, I'm going to be a gay footballer. I'm going to be coming out as gay. And the boys reacted immensely. You know, they were fantastic with their reaction. They all gave me a hug straight away and they said, Josh, we just want you to be happy and we just want you to feel comfortable in your own skin. You know, we're not going to treat you any differently. You're the same kid as what you were yesterday, what you were as last year. Like nothing changes for us. And that was so important for me that they said that because that made me feel so comfortable and made me feel good that they're not going to change and treat me differently.
You know, after carrying around that kind of secret for, 5 years, it must have been such a relief to just be open about it.
Yeah, definitely. Look, it created some bad behaviors where I would automatically just lie and do things unconsciously without even thinking about it. You know, it's still taking me, it's been a week now and I still feel a bit like I'm lying still when I don't need to. And that's something that I'm going to have to unlearn. You know, that was 6 years of lying that I created and it was a habit that happened so often that I didn't even realize.
What does that mean? Like in what ways did you feel like you were lying about other things? Like explain that to me.
Yeah, so it could be just a normal conversation, you know, where were you today? And it became so normal that I was lying and lying and lying and lying and it was just a habit that happened without me even thinking.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that, right? Because you're not, it sounds like you're not just lying about your sexuality. Like this kind of infiltrates every aspect of your life. It sounds like you had to be vigilant about everything and carry that around 24 hours a day for 6 years.
Yeah, definitely. It's not something that I could put my guard down with. You know, it was just a simple thing, you know, having a conversation with my mum, you know, to having conversations with my friends when we're out having fun. Like it's really hard because you want to make sure that you don't say anything that people are going to be a bit concerned with or question you or think other of you or less of you. So it's definitely something that you can't let your guard down. It was something that you have to keep up for every minute of every day. And look, that did wear me down a lot. That was 6 years of having this guard on all the time, 24/7. You know, it doesn't matter if it was my friends or family. It was the same guard I had on.
So you came out to your teammates. Why did you decide that you should also go public about this?
Yeah, look, it was something that I just didn't want to hide anymore. You know, I just wanted to be up in front and honest and I didn't have to put this guard. No, I really wanted to take that mask off and throw it away. And goddamn, I did. So I'm really happy I did that. And it's something that I wish I just did sooner.
How were you feeling before the announcement went online? Like, tell me about that day.
I was counting down the hours, the minutes, the days. This was such a long time coming for me. So I was really, really, really excited. You know, when I pressed that post button, I instantly had this sign of relief, you know, and I didn't even know how people were going to react. So it was such an internal feeling that just made me feel amazing. And I was honestly on top of the world.
When did the reactions start rolling in?
Straight away, honestly. I had to turn off my phone because it was just blowing up. And my phone ended up just kept on crashing on me. So it was very overwhelming and I've never, ever experienced anything like it. But it's just hard to reply to everyone because I had something over 700,000 messages on Instagram.
Oh my God.
So I'm trying to work my way through it. And, you know, there's people in those DMs that send me and say, Josh, help me get through the day today. And I was struggling and this is an issue that I'm experiencing. And I want to help. I want to reach out to these people and help them and guide them and be a role model and inspire them that it's okay to be themselves. You know, it's okay.
Some of those who have spoken up in support of you include really incredible current and former players like Gary Lineker, Gerard Piqué, Antoine Griezmann. That must have been pretty amazing to see people you might have idolized growing up now celebrating you and your bravery.
Definitely. Look, even Jesse Lingard and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and it was just, it was amazing. Like, I can't explain the feeling. These are people that, you know, I look up to playing football and, you know, one day I want to play alongside them. And for them to put and know my face and my name now, it's just, it's amazing. It honestly feels like a dream come true. So it's nice to see, but that's not the point. For me, the point is I'm so glad they reached out and the public can see that, you know, there's straight footballers that say this is perfectly fine and natural and it happens in the outside world. So why can't it happen in football?
Josh, one of the strange things about your story is that it's even a big story to begin with. Like professional football is on the front foot with gay pride events. Some clubs have LGBT fan groups. And yet you, all the way in Adelaide, are the only out gay top-tier footballer in the entire world. Where are the rest of you?
Yeah, look, there's definitely people out there that, you know, are struggling with the same thing, and are professional footballers that don't want to come out. There are people that have reached out to me in confidentiality and said, you know, I'm struggling with the same thing, Josh. And there are professional footballers too. And look, and that's something you can't rush that process. Everyone's on their own journey.
So you've spoken to some of these other players who are professionals and who are gay. Did you give them any advice?
Yeah, definitely. Look, they shoot their questions through and I say, you know, it's something you want to be yourself. And at the end of the day, I wasn't happy. And now, look, I'm honestly on top of the world and I'm really happy. And internally, I can go to sleep at night and I'm proud of myself and I couldn't be happier. And that's something that they think and they read and they like the sound of that. And that's something they say, Josh, I haven't experienced that before. You know, I want to do that. And I said, that's in your hands, you know, it's your journey. And look, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't think there was, but there definitely is. And I'm glad I've taken that light.
Coming up, what Josh makes of the next World Cup in Qatar. A country where the law says someone like him could be jailed. Josh, you've played for the under-20s Australian side. If you stay on this trajectory, you're going to play in a lot of different countries that haven't made as much progress as Australia or the UK on this question, not least Qatar, where the World Cup's happening next year and where homosexuality is illegal. Do you think that holding the World Cup in a place where being gay is punishable by prison sends the wrong message?
Yeah, it does sadden me to see that. And I thought, I read something on the lines of, you know, it gives a death penalty, you know, people for gay people in Qatar, you know. So it's something that I'm very scared and wouldn't really want to go to Qatar for that. And that saddens me because, yeah, at the end of the day, the World Cup is in Qatar. And one of the greatest achievements as a professional footballer is to play for your country. And to know that is in a country that doesn't support, you know, it doesn't support gay people and puts us at risk of our own life. That does scare me. And that does make me, you know, reevaluate. Is my life more important than doing something really good in my career? Look, it's 2021. At the end of the day, everyone deserves to be themselves.
Josh, the first professional footballer to come out was Justin Fashanu about 30 years ago. The reception he got was pretty disgraceful, and within a decade, he actually ended his own life. It's fair to say that only a handful of men have followed him in coming out, almost all of them in the past decade. There was the American former Leeds player, Robbie Rogers, who was actually the first gay man in all American professional sport, which is just incredible.
And finally, I want to recognize what Robbie Rogers of the Galaxy has done for a lot of people by blazing a trail as one of the professional sport's first openly gay players. My guess is that as an athlete, Robbie wants to win first and foremost. That's what competition's all about. But Robbie, you've also inspired a whole lot of folks here and around the world, and we are very proud of you. So where's Robbie?
There was the German national player, Thomas Hitzlsperger.
Hitzlsperger. Hitzlsperger with a lightning bolt.
Who came out a few months after retiring.
The time is right simply because I quit playing about 6 months ago as a professional football player. And I think I have the time now that's necessary to talk about my experiences in professional football as a homosexual.
And there's Andy Brennan, another Australian who used to play for the Newcastle Jets.
Yeah, I mean, my main objective by coming out was obviously first for me to be comfortable because it's solely the most freeing thing I've felt. But I mean, I hope that, yeah, by people seeing that and seeing that it's completely okay and the reaction's positive, and if it's who you are, then you should be who you are.
But I can't remember any of the previous players who came out getting the sort of reception that you've gotten. Does that tell you anything about whether the game is ready for this in a way that maybe it hasn't been in the past?
I hope in 10, 20 years' time, this isn't even a conversation we have to have, you know. Look, so many people have come out and said that, and Klopp said that in an interview. This shouldn't even be necessary to talk about.
Actually, of course, I think we all agree it should not be like this. It's obviously that Josh is doing that, and it's such a big story. That's actually the problem we have, obviously, that it's not normal, or that he has to make an announcement, and he's not just living his life.
As the game evolves, I can guarantee you in 10 years' time, we're definitely going to have more than just me being an out professional gay footballer. So, it's an exciting time. And look, it's a change for football. And I think football's ready for this.
Josh, I can feel how unburdened you are by all this. And it's really infectious and it's a brilliant thing. The season in Australia starts in a few weeks. And you said earlier that you felt like you'd been carrying a weight around even when you were playing football. And I'm wondering if you've had a chance to play again since this announcement and how that now feels.
It feels amazing. I can't tell you how good it feels. Now that the world knows and my teammates know and everyone knows and it's not a secret, I feel unstoppable. It's actually amazing. This freedom in my head and the headspace that I've got now is so good. I feel like I'm developing and evolving and bringing this side of my game out that I haven't seen yet. And I'm so excited. And I just want to show the world what I'm about now.
Josh Cavallo, thanks so much for speaking with us.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. It was an honour.
That was Josh Cavallo, a footballer with the Australian club Adelaide United. Thanks so much to him. You can read more about Josh in a new story today, focusing on his concerns about playing in Qatar because of its harsh laws against homosexuality, which were quite striking coming from the only openly gay professional footballer in the world and a challenge to FIFA and Qatar. That's at theguardian.com. And that is it for today. If you haven't already, go and subscribe to our sister podcast, Science Weekly, which is posting episodes every day this week from COP in Glasgow. This is the crucial final week of the summit where we expect to see more agreements that will give us a sense of whether the world has any hope of keeping temperature rises below 1.5 degrees. So you'll want to follow it really closely. And that's where Science Weekly or Daily comes in. You can find it wherever you get this podcast. Today's episode was produced by Joshua Kelly. Sound design by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland.